Will you join me in prayer? Oh God, may the words of my mouth, the meditations of our hearts, and the actions of our lives be part of your great work of art in this place, in our lives, and in this world. For you are our strength and our salvation. I want to tell you about Sunday dinner. It's a thing, Sunday dinner, in my household. They don't always happen. We always have Sunday, and we always have something to eat, but we don't always have Sunday dinner. But often, and it's always a special thing when somehow it happens. And it usually happens kind of like this. The plan usually starts with a text message. The text message between myself or Trina and one of our family members or friends. And the text is simply, Sunday dinner? It can happen as late as Sunday morning. Sunday dinner? And usually there's a fairly quick reply. I'm in. What do I bring? And then it just starts. There's text flying all over the place to people ideas and timing, and it just kind of comes together. And this group, it includes family members. It includes Trina's folks, my kids, sometimes my folks if they're around. And then this kind of a bunch of other people. There's friends of family and family of friends. It kind of depends on who's around, who's passing through, it just kind of happens. And about 6 p.m. on a Sunday evening, there is a lovely collection, a bouquet of people, friends, family, all kinds of people, gathered around our table, a real tossed salad of people, beloved flotsam and jetsam, washed in on the shores of our life. And inevitably, I look around the table at the human life that is represented there, and the sheer magnitude of life story that is sitting around our table, the volume and beauty of humanity that's just there, collected. And I find myself in wonder and in awe that such a group could find its way to such a table. One among us who is at Sunday dinner fairly regularly has said to me on more than one occasion, you know, this is the family of my heart. And it is certainly the way it feels to me as well. I mean, I have family of my own, and I love them dearly, and there is nothing that will ever be an adequate stand-in for my family. There are unique bonds that I have with my blood relatives that are irreplaceable. And at the same time, at Sunday dinner, I look around at the gathered group, often including my blood relatives, but not only them. And I have to say, these people are the family of my heart, chosen and beloved. And often I ask myself, how did this happen? From the time that Jesus began to call disciples together on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, people wondered about that collection of people that gathered around him as well. See, there were strict social norms around who would associate with whom. And most of it was based on a definition of family. You associate with your own family. Property belongs within your own family. It doesn't get crossed. The wires of family never get crossed. Your marriages carve the strong boundaries around who belongs and who doesn't belong. You are responsible for your family and not really responsible for others, although in the Jewish community they were, right through the prophets, they were pushing on the edge of that. There are rules about who will take care of whom. If a spouse dies, there's never a question what's going to happen. There are rules, and you follow those rules because family is family, and we know what that means. Unfortunately, these well-defined lines just as often kept people apart as drew them together. Jesus discovered, and his gospel thrived among those who were outside the definitions, beyond the pale. And one of the things that distinguished the community that surrounded Jesus was that people who were not family started to treat each other like they were. They started taking responsibility for each other in ways that only family is supposed to. They started to offer a commitment to each other's well-being that just didn't fit. They were redrawing the lines in some pretty disturbing ways. Do you remember the time when Jesus' family came to the door while he was with his friends and teaching? They were worried that he was getting in over his head, both with controversy and with the company that he was keeping. People came up to him and said, "Your mother and your brothers are outside." And he looked, remember his reply? He looked around and he said, "Behold, my mother, my brothers and sisters." And I don't think that he was disrespecting his blood relatives. I think he was trying to redraw the line. Draw new lines of connection. Make new and radical circles of love that included people who had, up until that point, been habitually excluded by the lines. And then, on the cross, his mother and one of his disciples comes and is there at the foot of the cross. And he looks at them and he says, you remember what he said? "Woman, behold your son. Behold your mother." You see, he's deliberately redrawing the lines, creating a new thing. And that new thing crashed the party at the Pharisees' house. It was all family, all the right people in the right order, the people who were supposed to be there, the customary people, appropriate gathering. And then in comes one of Jesus' disciples, this questionable woman, all passionate and expressive. And she doesn't just stand in the shadows. I mean, that they could probably have tolerated. No, she comes right in, sits right down. And then she opens up a jar of ointment and anoints him. And she's weeping. And as she does, she lets her tears fall on his feet and she wipes them. And not only does the gift, the ointment, come pouring out, but so in that, in the midst of that gathering, does her pain and her longing, it's right there. And everybody can see it. It's unseemly. These tears are an offering as much as the ointment is. And somehow he is able to receive this odd, broken human being, and somehow she knows it. The keepers of the family lines are shocked and appalled. But he says, "Do you see this woman?" I mean, that's a powerful one. Like, the invisible one. "Do you see her? I came here and you offered to me no blessing. She has anointed me with precious oil. You offered no water for my weary feet, and she's bathed them with her tears. Don't give me those judgmental stares," he says. This is real faith. This is beloved community. "Behold, my family of the heart." Well, that rule-defying, fence-jumping collection of followers of Jesus kept up after his death and resurrection. And by the time Paul came along and was writing to the raggedy band, motley crew that gathered in Corinth 2 decades later, he needed to offer them a totally new image of who they were. Family as an image just really didn't work anymore for that group. It's been the thing that they've been jumping over all along. So he said, "You're the body of Christ. And each one of the members of that body, you draw life, breathe from the same spirit. You are expressions of the same love and grace. You are transformed by the one and the same gospel of love and justice. But you are a mixed collection, I can tell you. A mixed collection of members that do different things, but for the same sake. And somehow you are the body. One body. A new thing." And when I look around at this particular collection of people, here, this thing we call Northwood, I mean, look at us. Look at us. I see people who have held positions of power and pumped gas. I see people who grew up in Surrey, lived here all their lives, and others who have just kind of washed in from some other place. I see people who I see a lot of souls behind a lot of eyes at work. I see an incredible diversity of life, of humanity. You can see it too. You just have to look around. And I marvel at the body of Christ, because just as last week I talked about God the artist and we the individually right here in heart and soul, a work of art going on, a work of art in progress. Today I look at us together, this body, and I behold God the artist, and this collection of people, a medium of God's handiwork, a work of art in progress together. I see sisters who are not sisters, but they treat each other like sisters. I see elders behold children that are not actually their children or grandchildren, but they behold them and care about their welfare and long for them to have a fullness of life that they know is possible. The space between us, that magnetic space, is the medium of God's artistry. That's where it happens. The invitation is here to allow your life to be a part of that great body of art. As you bring your precious oil and your joy and your tears and your peculiar and particular character and pour it out. Offer it, thereby becoming a part of the work of art. Tonight we will have another Sunday dinner. The text message went out yesterday. This one's going to be a little different because we lost a member yesterday, my father-in-law. So Trina's not here, and she's at home with her mom. And that's the thing with this peculiar and particular body of art. It's constantly changing. You never know who's going to walk through the door and will be different. You never know who's going to walk out the door and will never be the same. And you never know what's going to happen in between those two times and how you will be different and I will be different. There are people at the table in the spirit as well. That's the other thing about this body, is it's not only a physical body, it's a spiritual body. And we call together the communion of saints. It's powerful. Christ is at the table. George is at the table. Gosh, this work of art even jumps the fences of life and death to create this spiritual body. So look around with your eyes and your memory and your hearts and behold who you are. Offer who you are. That way we get to become a part of the body of art. Thanks be to God.